I really do believe that one of our roles as an athletic administrator is to be that chief educational officer. For anyone who says, I don't have time, I'll challenge you. You better find time because your future depends upon it. That I help coaches get better. And if I can do that, I'm doing my job.
Hey everybody, my name is Pat Cohan and this is the AD Insider Thursday 30. Our guest for today's show is Dr. David Hoke. Former athletic director for 16 years and basketball coach for 24, one who has over 40 years of experience in education-based athletics and is the most prolific writer on that subject, with over 760 articles published for professional magazines and 4 books all about education-based athletics. And on this episode, we're going to talk about becoming the chief educational officer of your athletic department, the foundations of marketing your athletic department, and identifying when to make changes in your athletic department. Before we dive into these topics, I do want to thank our partner in this episode, and that's Concordia University Irvine. The number one educational athletics master's program in the nation, one that you can take 100% online, in person, or a unique blend of both. If you're interested in learning more, go to cui.edu. For those of you that don't know Dr. Hoke, he has his doctorate in sports management from Temple University, is the past president of the Maryland State Athletic Directors Association, and he formerly was the executive director of the Maryland State Coaches Association. So, Dr. Hoke, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Now, going off of our title and our first topic, I'd like you to define the difference between the chief educational officer of an athletic department versus being maybe the chief executive officer of an athletic department.
A CEO on a corporate level is the chief executive officer. That's the person who runs the corporation. On an educational basis, the corresponding person would be the superintendent of schools, or on private schools, it would be the headmaster. So the differentiation is that as an athletic administrator, let's call it a play on words. I took the title CEO, and how can I apply that to what we do educationally as an athletic administrator? You look at the term education-based athletics. First thing that should jump out at anybody's mind is the term education. If we don't have the element of education involved in our athletic programs, And this is not my direct quote. It comes from a gentleman by the name of Tim Flannery, who had been the assistant executive director at the National Federation for many years. And he often expressed it this way, that once we lose the educational value, the future of high school athletics is in real doubt. And that's what distinguishes us between travel teams or, and this is not a disparaging comment, AAU or community-based teams or whatever. But the distinguishing factor is our programs have educational value. So when this was a while ago, when someone mentioned the term CEO, the light bulb went off in my head. And that happens quite often. And I thought, oh my gosh, how about if I play on words a little bit and we claim and we use it as the chief educational officer? That made sense to me because as an athletic administrator, you are totally responsible for what goes on in your program. And if education is the foundation of it, what do you do to enhance the learning opportunities within your program? And so I felt that the term chief educational officer was extremely appropriate. I don't want to take credit for a lot of things, but I'll take credit for inventing that term. And that's strictly my term. Therefore, there are probably a lot of athletic administrators across the country who have never heard the term because I used it one or two times and that's it. So I really do believe that one of our roles as an athletic administrator is to be that chief educational officer.
We hear about it a lot. You know, this is about the students. This is about education-based athletics. I mean, do you think that some athletic directors are just the best person at saying the right things in the building than actually somebody that's activating those things?
I'd like to plead the fifth on that question, because I think the answer is yes. I think there are some individuals who know enough to say the right thing. But when you actually view how things are being operated and how it functions, sadly, it doesn't always match.
If I was an athletic director in a high school and I brought you in to evaluate if I was being a good steward of education-based athletics, what are the questions you would ask me to evaluate, you know, where I am at on that meter of exceptional versus needs improvement?
If I am evaluating a coach because I am instructed by my job description or my supervisor, principal, superintendent, whatever, says you must evaluate coaches, that is a management perspective, not leadership. It's management. Pure and simple. Your middle management, your supervisor is saying you must evaluate coaches. If, on the other hand, you're evaluating coaches for the purpose of helping them to grow, develop, improve, so that the beneficiaries are your student athletes, that's leadership. See, now you're helping them grow and develop. The ideal combination may be if you combine both. Your supervisor is telling you, you must do it. But in the back of your mind, you're doing it for the purpose of helping them grow. If you can do that, then you've got it. I think there are other things. We read mission statements, or I read mission statements, and I sometimes cringe when I read some mission statements. I go, you can't be serious. Maybe it's just a case of poor word usage. Maybe it's a case of not simply thinking about what you're saying. But too often in a mission statement, you'll hear cliches such as, we hope to run an exemplary program. How do you define exemplary? Does that mean, is that just another way of saying we want to win a lot of games? Or we want to be a competitive program? Again, does that mean, hey, we got to win a lot more games than we lose? So if you're going to use those terms, you really have to define what is exemplary. Are you meeting the goals of your student athletes? Are you helping them grow and develop? That has to be clearly pointed out in your mission statement. Or if you're going to use the other one where we want to be competitive, well, what about learning sportsmanship? What about learning perseverance? What about learning whatever all of the other qualities that you may want to list? So it comes down to, if you read the mission statement and you say you believe in education-based athletics, maybe you better spend more time on the actual wording of your mission statement. Because that mission statement should guide your whole program.
It should is it also a way to evaluate yourself too?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't get to that, but you're absolutely right. So at the end of the year, at the end of several years, go back to your mission statement. Did you hit those parameters? And if you didn't, what are you going to do about it? So mission statements, I think, are important. Okay, a little thing. Your participation rate. Kids are going to play, and I don't want to oversimplify it. Yeah, they like to win. Don't be wrong. Studies have proven and shown that the number one reason young people participate is because they enjoy it. They want to be with their friends. They want to learn. They want to improve. Well, your participation rate is a pretty good indicator. If you take how many athletes you have in your program, and you take a look at the school your school's enrollment, divide the enrollment into your participants, and that gives you your participation rate. It's not complicated. Even I'm mathematically challenged, I can do that. And so as a consequence, do you have 60% participation rate? That, by the way, that'd be pretty darn good. Do you have a 50% participation rate? But if you have a 40% participation rate, and I don't want to affix any particular number to it, at some point along the line, you've got to say, wait a minute, maybe we're not reaching the needs of these kids. Maybe we have more to do if we're only getting 40%. And so a simple thing like your participation rate can be a major benchmark, a major eye-opening experience.
So let's actually use this use case of low participation rates. What can you do? You've assessed that, like, hey, we have less than 50% or less than 40%, whatever is the number where you might see that it needs to be some improvement. In your background, your doctorate was in sports management and really was studied a lot of the corporate world and how those businesses operate. And so marketing was a big focus of that. How would you recommend a high school athletic director, you know, evaluate and build maybe their marketing campaign to get more athletes to come out?
Marketing is not a complicated process. So let's start with a very simple operational definition. Marketing is nothing more than positively promoting your service or your product or your service. And so on a corporate level, whatever your product is, maybe you're producing cars, maybe you're producing television, it doesn't really matter. Or you're producing a service, doesn't really matter. In high school athletics, it is no different. Absolutely no different. So take a few of the words. You're going to promote the positive aspects of your product or service. And we don't have time for a gigantic debate. You can substantiate one way or the other. Your athletic program is a product or provides a product or a service. And I don't think that's really essential.
So what do you mean by product versus service? Like, what would be an example product of that?
Okay. If you're going to use the product approach, the graduating senior would be the finished product of your athletic program. It means that they've taken advantage of the coaching. They've learned skills. And I don't mean necessarily just sport-specific skills. They've learned leadership and humility and respect and so forth. So they've taken what you have, and when they're finished, 3 years later, 4 years later, whatever they've been involved in your program, they are a better person. They are more accomplished. They can, a matter of fact, and we use this in education-based all the time, they can take those, and the purpose of this is they can take those skills and translate them and adapt them to life. And that should be our ultimate purpose, getting them ready and moving them forward for success in life, not just in high school basketball or high school volleyball. And hey, fine, let's go do that. But a greater purpose. If it's a service, one might argue, and you know, you can go either way, but might argue that you're providing the coaching, the venues, the facilities, the equipment, the schedule. You're providing all these things. You're providing the service, and what that athlete does with it is up to them. They may come out adept and skilled and knowledgeable, but you're providing service. What they do with that service then becomes their onus. So whether it's a product or a service, to me, is not the important part of the discussion. You mentioned, and I think it is marketing the positive aspects. And marketing comes down to three primary goals. The first is understanding. The second is appreciation, and the third is support. So let's start with the corporate world to give a quick background, and then we can apply it to athletics. In the corporate world, and I don't care what the product is, you need that consumer to understand what's involved in that product. Let's just take a Ford truck, a Ford 150 truck. Well, it has a load capacity of such and such. It has disc brakes. It has a 300 horsepower engine. So you're letting the consumer know what is in that product. Why? Then this next step is appreciation. You want that consumer to understand why that product is good. It's qualified, it's well constructed, it's durable, it's whatever other qualities that company is trying to. So you need to appreciate that product. And the final one is support, and that translates into purchasing that product. And long term, that company would, again, let's go Ford. Oh, by the way, I like Fords. I love Mustangs. I don't get paid extra for that. I have a Mustang and I love Mustangs. But that company, Ford or any other company, television, cameras, whatever it may be, want you to continue to buy their product. And that's known as brand loyalty. So you first have to understand the product. You then need to appreciate the product, and then you have to purchase the product and do it, hopefully, long term. So let's adapt that to high school athletics. We do the exact, we or I don't say we do. We should be doing exactly the same thing. So let's go with the first part, understanding. Let's use a different term, education. We have to educate parents, administrators, school boards, the community at large. What is the purpose and value of education-based athletics? This is not a negative. Many of them don't understand. Many of them have not experienced it. Many of them may not have been exposed to it. So just like marketing on the corporate world, our first step is, here's what it is. Here's why it's important. Here's what it includes. Here's the value of it. If we don't achieve that, we're not going to step two or three. So we have to educate all of our consumers. And again, our consumers are not just our parents, but there's school board members, the community at large, the whole routine. The next step is now they have to appreciate it. Hey, we have value here. We do a good job. Now, as we've talked a little bit earlier, and some programs may not do a good job. So you better step up your game. You better get to that point where you do a good job. Do a good job with the educational aspect. And then lastly, comes to support. Support can come in two ways, two avenues. One, yes, you want individuals to come to your games to watch, and you're generating gate revenue. But that's one small little aspect. Basically, what you'd like is that from the superintendent and the school board, they fully fund or fund it as well as they can your program. And that even comes from the community and parents. Parents in the community can put pressure on principals and superintendents and school boards. They can make their voices known. And so support generated by, do you have sufficient funds? You mentioned it. My career went 41 years. I can honestly say this, in 41 years, I was never in any program where we had more money than we knew what to do with. Never happened. So we're not talking about we have so much. It's a matter of how do we close the gap? We have sufficient, or maybe a little more than sufficient. And so that those three things are all marketing. If we fail, and I get this quite often from athletic administrators. Someone will say, I have so much on my plate. I just don't have time. I'm going to reverse that. I don't think you have time not to do it because your future, your program's future depends upon it. At some point in time, some school board member or some superintendent says, you know, we don't need this. And if you haven't been successful educating them why it is important and getting sufficient funding, it can go that route. Now, I'm not saying it happens with great regularity around the country because it doesn't. But you're dependent upon that type of support for your continuing program. So for anyone who says, I don't have time, I'll challenge you, you'd better find time because your future depends upon it.
So say you have a program that you feel like you're a steward of education-based athletics. You are selling it every chance you get. But you do have a coach that or a program, a team that is not winning, is not really supported by the community. And you're stuck with that decision of, hey, they do everything right on the holistic purpose of education-based athletics. But at the end of the day, the community is not happy with them. The student athletes are not showing up for that team. They're transferring. They're going somewhere else so they can play for a more successful program. Like, how do you manage that type of situation if the person in that seat is doing all the things that maybe would be embodied by a great education-based program?
Okay. First, let's deal with some factors that are beyond your control. And that's probably a pretty good point overall anyway. There are some things that are beyond your control. Let's be right up front with that. But let's say there's a team, and to use the perspective that they may not be winning a lot of games. Let's deal with that first. I've done some work with that over the years, and we actually can put percentages on it. The largest percentage why a team wins, and it's 60%, is the available athletic talent. Now, someone's going to argue that good coaching, you're going to raise the level. Yes, we'll get to that in a second. But if you're, and let's use basketball because I'm highly familiar or more familiar with basketball. If you have a talent base where you're coming out and your tallest player is 6'2", and you're playing teams that typically have 6'7" and 6'8", it doesn't mean you can't compete. You can. A coach is going to adjust and have a good approach and philosophy and system and so forth. But in basketball, you play five players at a time. If you're honest and you look at it, and they're five on the floor are much better than your five that you're putting out there, 60% of the time, the five with the most talent are going to win. That's it. Now, that's hard for parents to understand. It's hard for the community to understand. I understand it. As you pointed out, I coached for 24 years, and I coached 14 on the college level. I get it. I know. So now as an athletic administrator, I have that advantage. I know that that coach, that's the best talent. It goes in cycles. Unless you're in a super large school and you have some unbelievable community base, there are some years where you look out on that floor, you're going, oh my gosh. But that's the best you have. And so in education-based athletics, you're not giving up. You're going to work hard with those kids and you're going to get them to improve and so forth. But on the other side of the floor, they're rolling out 3-6-8 kids and you're going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So let's go to the next phase. The next part is coaching. And yes, good coaches or great coaches can win some games. That's 20%, up to 20%. Let's use, and I'm going to simplify this in terms of math because math is not my area. Let's say you have a 20-game schedule. I chose 20 because I can do this. 60% of 20, I think, is 12. So 12 games, you're winning because of talent. I was in a setting where, in a high school setting, where one year we went, well, for 3 years, we went, we won an awful lot of games. One year we went 26-2. We had great talent. Now, don't get me wrong, I worked hard. I knew the game. I cared. But I had five Division I players on that team who eventually went on to college. So, wait a minute. There's no secret why we won 26 games. Because we had superlative talent. The next year, four of those five starters are in college. We had to start from scratch. We didn't win 26 games. Did I know anything less? No. Did I work any less hard? No. Did I do anything? No. I didn't have those four studs. Those studs were gone. Parents didn't understand that. Parents expected us to win 26 games again. No, no, no. So on the other hand, if we have a 20-game schedule, a good coach or a great coach is going to make adjustments in practice for 2 days, go into the game, make the right decisions in games, motivate his or her players, get the absolute most out of those players, and you're going to win four games that talent-wise, they have a better team. They may have a much better team. Your decisions, your effort, your approach, you're going to win those four. And the last 10 or 15% are things like injuries. I mean, let's go basketball. changes, like football, obviously, it's you have more players. If you lose your top player to an injury early in the season, it's going to make a difference. You don't have somebody on the bench that comes in and has that same talent. You don't have it. So injuries will play a role. If you're an outdoor sport, weather may play a role. Somebody could argue, well, it affects both teams. It does. Maybe your style of play is more affected than the other team's style of play. Like, you can't use weather as an excuse in basketball, but or volleyball, or but you know, you're in a gym. But the point is that may happen. And sometimes, and I'm not listing all the variables in that point, but it also comes down to sometimes you get a little luck or a lack of luck. And so that's in that 10 or 15 range. So when you add all the percentages together, the number one variable is the 60% with talent. Now, I had a parent at my recent school who would say, well, you got to get the kids in the weight room. Our coaches did. But while we're doing that, our opponents are doing the exact same thing. They're in the weight room. So you're not transforming this ordinary kid into the superstar because of the weight room. Yeah, you still want to do it, and you should do it. It's the logical thing to do. But your opponents are doing the same thing. So let's go with basketball. If those 3, 6, 8 kids are in the weight room and they're working hard, they're coming out as super studs, and you still have a 6'2 kid. That's not changing. That 6'2 kid may be the best prepared kid you get in the world. They're going up now against 3, 6, 8 studs. So the point being, I understand this. And so in my evaluation and in my approach of marketing the program, I'm using that. And whoa, we can't use this as the determinant for success. So if I have a coach who hits all the benchmarks, nurturing, supportive, the kids are learning leadership, the kids are learning sportsmanship, the kids are doing it, they're working hard, they have a positive attitude. No, that coach stays because our talent level. No.
Okay, so this is the main.
I don't think anything's for forever.
When do you make the change?
I only make the change if I don't think that coach is doing everything he or she can do, meeting the needs of the students. I never base it on wins or losses. Never. Never, ever.
I feel like there's some coaches that have done the same thing every year. They're such a good steward of education-based athletics. Everybody likes them. And, you know, you're probably not going to find somebody better out there. And so you kind of get into this like stagnation of they do the same thing every year. They're, you know, a 600 ball club. So they're okay. Like, it's all fine. But do you ever need to make a change from fine? Or do you just okay with the, I'm not going to say mediocrity, but like if they're doing what's great for education-based athletics and they're an okay program, you just kind of look away? Or like as an athletic administrator, do you try to up that standard or push for better records? Or
I don't push for better records. Okay. I would push for, is there something more we can learn? Are there any adjustments we can make? From that standpoint, yes. But I'll go back to I will never, never base it on wins or losses or lack thereof. That's just not part of the formula. But is there more we can we make tweaks? Can we change? Can we improve? Yes. That goes back to my whole concept of we do that in coaching evaluations. We do that in putting together an action plan. We do that in terms of professional development. We do that in ongoing continuing education. So we do all of that, but we're not going to do it based on, oh, you didn't get enough wins. Nope, not going there.
And that pretty much sums up like the role of the chief educational officer is activating those bullet points you just read off to help progress your school's athletic department and the success of its programs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So again, I realize it's a new term for some, and some may say, oh, I do enough already and I'm overwhelmed. But to me, this is the essence of it. Okay, let's use a different term. yes, I like the term chief educational officer, but I've also used, I did not originate this term. I am the coach of coaches. My job is to help each and now I had 65 paid positions. So granted, I spent more time with some than others, but my job is, what can I do to help them get better? How, and again, and let's use that. If they get better at whatever aspect of it is, then they're passing that on to the student athletes. And now their experience, the student athlete's experience, is better. And so it's a kind of a cyclical cycle thing where if I'm doing my job, let's even use that. You talked about self-assessment. I often did this during the summer. I would look at all the things I had to do. And if you're honest about it, as an athletic administrator, it runs into the hundreds. There are hundreds of things you have to do. But I would also take a look at how much time I spent on some of those items. I probably spent more time as coach of coaches than all the rest of the things I did, because I felt that you hit the key. I felt that was the key to producing a better education program. Let's use another way of explaining it. If I am the general as the athletic administrator, and I am, my lieutenants are the coaches. If I don't get my lieutenants to follow my mission in battle, and I don't mean to be military about this, but if I don't get them to follow my mission, we're not getting there. So I have to do a pretty darn good job of getting my coaches to understand, buy in, improve, and pass that along to the student athletes. And our student athletes are then beneficiaries of all this. But I'm the general, but I can't do it without lieutenants. And so my job is to coach them up, to do the best job. And so when I analyze it over each summer, that's where I spent a good part of my time, was working with coaches. Because that don't get me wrong. Yeah, I had to reschedule buses, part of the job. I had to submit a budget. Okay, part of the job. But the real impact was, could I help coaches get better? And if I can do that, I'm doing my job.
That's a perfect segue into, you know, the summer as ADs transition out of their spring seasons and into the summer and things to focus on. And that 20% that might actually affect the winning, but also the holistic mission of the athletic department as a whole. So Dr. Hoke, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us. And hope you enjoy, you know, your retirement and more writing for high school coaches and athletic directors across the country.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I am not retiring from writing or producing or presenting or teaching anytime soon. I'm not quite at that point yet. It's going to come. At my age, it's going to come, but I'm not done yet.